Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. So much to talk about today. Yanar Fjortoff and Ali Moreno will be joining me a little later on to discuss what happened in the penultimate round of matches in the Bundesliga. But we start in the Premier League. And when the government were trying to get things back to normal with regards to football in England, they said it would lift the morale of the nation. Not if you're an Arsenal fan. Another defeat today. Here to discuss it, Julien Laurent, Frank Leboeuf and Stevie Nicol. Stevie, after that defeat against City, I thought, right, OK, you know, it's a tough game. City are a good team. They're going to bounce back now against a Brighton side who, let's not forget, haven't won a game this year. Yet they go on to lose by 2-1. What happened?
What happened is what's been happening to Arsenal over the last, 3 years? Maybe even longer. You know, they at times can do some good things. I mean, Pepe's goal, for example, is just a piece of individual brilliance. But unfortunately, you only ever see it now and again. And that kind of is what Arsenal are. If you add to that another woeful defensive performance, I mean, this team has nobody that can even sense danger. The goal from the corner is ridiculous. 2v1. Nobody even notices it's 2v1. And then, of course, it's the second ball as well. It's the same old problems for Arsenal because it's the same team. It's the same players. And until that changes, you can't expect anything other than, well, the unexpected, because we don't know what you're going to get from Arsenal. It isn't changing. I didn't think it was going to change that much in this game against Brighton. And I don't see it changing much for the rest of the season,
but
to be honest.
Surely the players they had out there today should be good enough to beat Brighton.
Yes, I think so. I think they did well in a way that they dominated the game and they had chances and they hit the crossbar and Ryan made some good saves. But I think we have to review the expectation that we have on the Gunners. We keep the track on who they were and not who they are, and the club is not where it used to be. And those players who are on the field are not the players that we used to see. And it's clear that there is a lack of consistency, there is a lack of performances. Defensively, it's quite a nightmare. And when you used to have fantastic players, international, worldwide players at the Emirates Stadium and before Highbury, you want to see the same thing. But they're not the same players. And Arsenal is not the same team that it used to be. And we saw that today where they can't keep a score. They have a hard time to score. They can't keep it. And then at the end, they even surprised with another 1-2, a very good 1-2, but lack of marking, lack of concentration to even just draw a game against Brighton.
Let's welcome in our Arsenal apologist now to the show, Julien Laurent. Jules, how do you spin this one?
Like the boys have just said, I think there's a lack of efficiency in both boxes that is quite outstanding, really, when you think about the chances that they missed. And they could easily have been 3-0 up with the Saka hitting the crossbar, and then Lacazette with two big chances, the first one blocked by Dunk and the second one stopped by Ryan. And obviously that has a big impact on the game. And then when you concede the goals you concede, because Arteta is right at the end, it's unacceptable the way you concede the two goals, the first one on set PC, the second one right at the end, which was quite a simple move, really, a dummy and a 1-2. And there's a lack of leadership, again, that is quite important in that team that's been for years. But again, you see this time, and you know what? You see even more when you can hear the players talking, because you watch the game tonight, like on Wednesday night, and if you don't put the fake noise from the crowd, and if you just listen to the players, you can tell there's no leader in there. On the defensive set pieces, there's no one shouting, no one telling who to mark, where to go, what to do. And I think that lack of leadership is a big problem as well.
Isn't that something that Arteta could have addressed earlier, Stevie? Is there not a case of going, right, this is what we're going to do for set pieces, this is your role? He's got to be at fault in these sort of situations, surely.
Unfortunately, Dan, you don't understand the mentality of your professional footballer. Just because you tell somebody where to be in a certain situation doesn't mean they're going to do it when it matters most. And that is the first goal is a classic example, because every single coach will do set pieces against, and you will organise, if they have two men out, they will organise the one that will be out to begin with, and then the second one will be told he has to go. So basically, you're relying on players doing as they're told. And Arteta must be pulling his hair out because he came into Arsenal thinking this was a, he came to the Arsenal thinking this was the Arsenal he used to be at. He's now realising that this is going to affect his career because he's finding out that regardless of how good a coach you are, regardless of what you tell your players, when they don't do it on the field, you're carrying the can. And Arteta is very soon going to be under some pressure if they continue to perform like this.
Morpay is very much the focus of Arsenal's attention. Of course, that clash of Bernd Leno leading the Arsenal goalkeeper off in the first half and then scoring the late winner. We saw some scuffle as well afterwards. Morpay coming out and saying that basically Arsenal need to learn some humility, talking about one player in particular who was talking too much throughout the game. Do we assume that was Guendouzi, Jules? What do we know about this?
Yeah, probably would be the case that Mbappé was talking about Guendouzi. Both of them are French. They used to face each other in the French second division in the past. I think there were probably a lot of words exchanged, especially after the Leno clash, like you said. And then I think the frustration of losing the game late on a Mbappé goal as well, if you from an Arsenal point of view and from a Matteo Guendouzi point of view, maybe can explain why then he grabbed him by the throat and sort of kind of threw him on the floor, although that's not a justification and an excuse for Guendouzi, who should not have done that and might be well punished retrospectively as well by the FA. They're just losing it as well, Arsenal, and that's the problem. And when I talk about leadership earlier, this is also when a leader comes to the front, is when your team is a bit struggling, when you concede that equaliser that really you should not have conceded, and there's still 15 minutes to go in the game. And if you can't win it, at least don't lose it. And I think that's where leaders on that pitch, whether it comes from Arteta or players by themselves on the pitch, I don't care. But this is when you say, okay, we can't win it. Maybe we're tired. He's made changes that are not really working out because that's the fact as well. So let's make sure we don't lose it. And I think the frustration and the disappointment clearly took over the Arsenal players and Guendouzi especially.
His behaviour, absolutely, no question, tells you there's no guidance going on at Arsenal. When you have a 19, what is he? I think he's just turned 20, has he? When you've got a kid who's done nothing in the game, who's come in as a prospect, he's still got potential, hasn't really shown much yet, and he's running around in the Premier League trash-talking, that tells you what's going on at Arsenal. There is no guidance, and there's definitely none on the field, but if there's any off it, nobody's listening to it.
Looking at it as well, like the clash with Leno, did you have any problem with it, Frank? Obviously, we saw him as he was being stretched out, shouting at Morpay. Arteta came out afterwards and said, look, these things just happen. I don't feel there was anything vindictive in it.
Yeah, and Arteta said it as well to Mope when he after watching the action, and I still believe after watching and watching the action that Mope was just going for the ball, and it's unfortunately Leno who in fact received badly his leg and twisted his knee, and we're in England, we see worst. And normally nothing happens, and it's very sad for Leno because he's maybe the only satisfaction that we saw against Manchester City. Even if Martinez did well, it's always very sad to see a player going out in this kind of injury.
Right then, Jules. The big question now is how do you fix it going forward if you're Arsenal?
That's the big question. I don't know if Mikel Arteta has the answers, or Edu or Raul Sanieri or whoever else at the club. I think there's a big game coming up away at Southampton. That's not going to be easy. They can well lose that one as well, and things will get worse and worse. There's so many things to change just in terms of squad to start with, because I think Arteta, although he doesn't have much experience, I think he's probably the right man for the job. He loves the club. He's got a good idea, although I would like to see a bit more consistency in what he tries to do, because against City, he plays the kids. Okay, no problem, that's your call. But then you change everything again 3 days later and you bench the kids and you play your more experienced players like Lacazette, for example. And then what is he going to do next? He's going to reverse again and go back with the kids and then bench the same people. I mean, he also needs to keep the same direction and stick with it, whether it's good or not, whether it works at the beginning or not. Just stick with it and send the same message all the way through, not just one day one message and the next day another message and then another message again. But I think he's the right guy for the job. But then there's so much rebuilding to do in that squad, so much character to bring in. the not so good character to get rid of. There's players who are not good enough, not even just for Arsenal level, for Premier League level. I mean, come on. Today, Ceballos, I mean, what was that? He does 1,000 touches every time he's on the ball. I mean, Mustafi at the back. Stevie, right now, Stevie is a better defender than Shkodran Mustafi. There's no doubt. Frank is definitely much better. But even Stevie at his age is much better than Mustafi. I mean, come on. This can't go on for much longer.
We all know, and we've had this discussion, I feel like, for the last couple of years, Jules. And we talked about the fact that they need to bring in leaders. They need to bring in top quality defenders. Yet here we were on the last day of the transfer window last year, and they had to make do with David Luiz. How is things going to change if you can't attract the sort of players that you need, that you want, that you are looking to bolster this squad? You just kind of see that Arsenal just going around in this weird, vicious circle.
You're right, there's a bit of that. I mean, leaders doesn't have to be the most expensive players in the world either. That's where your scouting network and your recruitment team has to do their homework and their work. You don't need to go and spend 100 million on one player who's a leader. There are leaders who are not costing that much money. You just need to find the right leaders and the right players to improve that squad. And I don't think this is too hard. The problem they've had as well is that they can't sell players. Who wants to buy Mustafi right now? Nobody, trust me, in no league whatsoever, in no countries. Mesut Ozil is the same, and the list goes on and on. And the problem is, if you don't sell, you can't just keep buying players and making your squad 25 players, 30 players, 35 players, because you add players, but you don't sell players. So they will have to sell and try to sell as many as they can, the players they don't want, and then when they're going to replace them, at least find the right one, and especially, as we said, in terms of character,
right,
and leadership.
You know, I like to play devil's advocate and maybe go against the grain a little, but it's difficult to find anything positive at the moment to say about Arsenal at all, not only from today's performance and what we saw against City, but just the big picture going forward.
Yeah, that's kind of dramatic what we see. And again, because we have a high expectation about that club and the fact that that club should be at the top level, fighting in the first four places in the rank. And they're not, because they're not capable of, and because we ask too much for those players who are not top players. Jules, we're talking about those players who should go. And you were asking if who could come, but don't worry. And that's the sadness of everything. Nobody wants to come to Arsenal right now, because Arsenal is not the club it used to be. And top players don't want to go to Arsenal, because what they're going to do there? They have to buy 10 players. But as you say, you don't need to spend 100 million for each. You have to be clever. And that's the main problem. In the 90s, between 95, 96 and 2001, when I was playing against Arsenal, they were so clever on recruiting good young players. They don't do that anymore, so you don't see anything anymore. And that's the result of a bad performances for also what's going on in the office of the club, because they don't recruit the right people for the right club.
It's a mess, isn't it, Stevie?
Listen, if there's any sort of positive thing, it has to be the young kids. You know, the Martinellis and Ketias, the Maitland-Niles. Unfortunately for Arteta, the only way these kids can get to their full potential is if they're surrounded by hardened pros, leaders, people with courage and a big heart, but ability. And right now, these young kids are surrounded by none of that whatsoever.
And Dan, that's true what CV says. At the time when I was talking, when they were recruiting young guys, they had Tony Adams, Ian Wright, Martin Keown, Ray Parler, so many
Dixon.
Fantastic, Dixon, so many fantastic players, and they could bring young players who were completely sticking to what the club was. Now it's hard for the youngs because they have nobody around them.
Meanwhile, a big result away from the Arsenal game today. Wolves with a 2-0 victory over West Ham. West Ham are in real trouble. Did not look that good at all. Meanwhile, for Wolves, put some level on points now with Manchester United in fifth place. Stevie, they're looking good, aren't they?
I'll tell you what, they've got some weapons. I mean, They've got a bit of everything, you know. You've got the, you know, Traore. I was going to say you're not quite sure what you're going to get, but actually these days you are. You're going to get a guy who's going to go past defenders and create havoc. You've got a goal scorer in Jimenez. You've got people like Neves. You've got Moutinho in the middle of the park, the old head, you know, just pushing everybody around. And of course, Neto, what a fantastic goal he scored today. And they are pretty solid at the back as well. So, listen, if there's one thing you know when you play against Wolves, you know exactly what you're up against, because they're as consistent as anybody in the Premier League.
You know my next question now then, Jules. Who's more likely to catch Chelsea, United or Wolves?
That's a great question, Dan. And I think Wolves have so much momentum as well. If you remember, they also went just before the break away at Spurs and won that game 3-2, coming back into the game. The coaching that Nuno made today again by bringing on Adama and Neto, again, winning coaching, and that's fantastic, and that's such a big asset to have if you're a Premier League club with a manager like that, is that his choices are working out. And I think if I were United right now, although they have momentum on their own because they haven't lost for 12 games now, and they played well when Pogba came on last night, but I think Wolves are a serious, very serious contender for that fifth place. And if you were Chelsea, you don't want to drop many points either, because Wolves are going to come for you, and they've got pretty good run of fixture as well, and they could be very interesting between now and the end of the season. Well, I kind of did, didn't I? I said, you want me to say one or the other, Wolves or United? I would still go for United, but
do you agree,
just
Frank?
About.
Yeah, I would have to agree. I think what they showed Manchester United the last game, they kept the spirit they had just before the pandemic. And on top of it, Pogba is back. I think he was good for 30 minutes. If they keep the same concentration and the way they want to play, they're going to be hard to follow for Wolverhampton. Even if Wolverhampton have fantastic players that I really discovered this season, Traore, I love him because he has the shirt inside the shirt. Reminds me my old time. But I mean, the power that he gets, that he got when he came in. When I see Boli at the back, the French defender was fantastic. Doherty on the right side with Traore on the second half. There is something special. João Moutinho was a ghost in Monaco. Is back as a real leader and a fantastic player in the midfield zone. So they have players to really fight against Manchester United and even Chelsea. So it's going to be very interesting until the end of the season.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. More of these three, by the way, are over on Extra Time. You can check that out over on our YouTube channel.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your dentist to actually believe you?
And you're flossing every day.
Absolutely.
Great. And you're cutting down on your sweets?
Of course.
Wonderful. Then I don't even need to look in there.
Great. See you in 6 months.
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers. Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
It was the penultimate round of matches then in the Bundesliga today. Bayern Munich are good. Lewandowski's very good. We'll talk about him a little later on in the show. Dramatic scorelines, though, regarding that push for a top four place. Hertha with a 2-0 victory over Bayer Leverkusen, coupled with Borussia Mönchengladbach's victory against Paderborn, put Gladbach very much in the driving seat to finish in a Champions League spot with one match remaining. Also today, we saw Borussia Dortmund take on Leipzig, and that's where we'll start today. Borussia Dortmund with a 2-0 win. Jan Fjortoff and Ali Moreno alongside me to discuss this. Jan, this Erling Haaland kid seems rather good.
He's an okay talent, isn't he? He chose to go to Dortmund and didn't go to RB Leipzig, and I think that was a good day for him. I spoke to him after the game. He was very happy, but he was not unhappy on one way, because he said, I could have scored five today. And if you saw the game, well, he could have scored five. He was it was a good revenge for last game against Mainz. Both him and Sancho were, well, we expect them to be the superstars of Dortmund. They were poor, but Sancho on the bench today, they put him there. But Erling Haaland so much on the pitch, and he looked good today and got two goals against RB Leipzig, who are now in six games at home, five draws and one loss. So what happened to Julian Nagelsmann, the Mozart of football?
Has Haaland already scored more goals than you did in your career, Ali?
Well, he's getting there. He's getting there quickly, very quickly. He's gaining ground, and there's nothing I can do to stop him. And here's the thing that I find most entertaining, interesting, and impressive about Erling Haaland. We just talked about the fact that he could have had five goals, and he said just as much. Well, yes, that may have been the case, but you talk about the mentality of a striker. Late in that game, it's 93rd, 94th minute. The ball is played out by Jadon Sancho to Julian Brandt on the right-hand side. You're winning 1-0. Any other human being in that position or somebody with lesser ambition than Erling Haaland says, you know what, just keep the ball in the corner. We'll see it out. We win 1-0. Instead, he makes a sprint to try to get in behind, to set up a run for himself so that he can get to that cross from Julian Brandt on the far post. And that tells me there is a hunger, there is a desperation to score goals. And whether he's thinking about that, he's trying to make up for the ones that he missed, or he's simply the sort of striker that says, well, I don't care how many I missed, I'm here to score goals. That mentality, whichever way you want to see it, is what you want out of a striker. And out of a young player, it shows a whole lot of maturity. There's a lot to like about Erling Haaland.
Jan, clearly, one of the elite strikers already in the world, which has got people questioning how long will he be at Borussia Dortmund? What's the timeline, do you think, ideally for Haaland here?
Well, you see, I mean, he got so many skills, this boy. He got the rawness that we already talked about there with his runs and all the things he's doing. There is also another great skill with him. First of all, is his attitude. He loves to play football. That is good. But also the skill to have people around him and tells you to do the right things, to develop, to getting better. First of all, we saw him when he scored a late winner against Fortuna Düsseldorf, when he pointed to his head, I have to work with my headers, but look, I can still do it, can't I? And then we'll see how he's chosen his clubs where he went. First, he went to Molde where Solskjaer was his teacher, so to say. Then he wanted to be a part of the Red Bull Academy kind of philosophy thinking. And then he went to Dortmund instead of going to Premiership, where I guess he is on still good money in Dortmund, but still that would be a mega deal. He will now stay at least, I would say now at least, because this boy is just getting more and more goals. And like I said to him, I got 14 goals in the Bundesliga. He got 13. And I said, if you can beat me, he did it in 4 months and I did it in 2 years.
Ah, yeah, and I love you. Somehow get the conversation back to you chatting to him. How big, just give us an idea before we move on, because it's fascinating. How big is he in Norway?
Well, I think we are proud of him, because I think going back to being a good guy, and that's why we kind of reacted when everybody said he was arrogant in these interviews. He's 19 and will do his mistakes, but we are proud that a small nation like ours can get that kind of players out. We are 5 million people, and we are so depending on how to make a national team. We need to get this generation going. We now got Martin Ødegaard in La Liga. We got Erling Haaland in the German Bundesliga. And proud, and also I think that is like your Americans, when they come into the Bundesliga, and one of them did very well to the Arena, by the way. And when they come to do well in the leagues, it's so inspiring for all young kids around Norway who wants to go the same road.
You mentioned Gio Reyna, his first start for Borussia Dortmund today. A beautiful assist for that opening goal. This is what he and Haaland had to say in the post-match interview.
It has been your first assist.
Yeah,
how about that?
I mean, I could have got a few more, maybe a goal, maybe another assist. But yeah, I'm just happy to help the team and give Erling a pass, and it was a good finish. So
Erling scored twice today, and always when he scores, the team wins the match. So how is it to play with him?
It's pretty easy. You just have to pass it to you just have to pass to him, and he scores. So that's what I did today. I should have passed him one more time, and he would have scored. But yeah, it's easy to play with him. It's fun.
You received the first assist of Giovanni Reyna. You just said it's very easy to play with you because you always know where the goal stands. So what about to play with him?
Yeah, he's I called him the American Dream before, and and that's true. He was, you know, he's 17 years old, and what he's doing on the pitch today is amazing. So he has a huge future in front of him.
I love that Erling Haaland is the voice of experience. Gio Reyna is 17 years old. Ali, how good was that touch?
It was perfect. The touch in itself and the execution of the touch was perfect, but it's the decision-making process. When Gio Reyna is trailing this play and sees this ball coming to him, mind you, we just mentioned that if this is his first start, you may have thought, well, this is his chance. This is his opportunity. He's thinking goal. Instead, he's seeing the full picture, and he's able to not only see it, but execute it. And I think that's the important part. He sees it, he executes the idea, and does so to perfection and puts it in a place in which Erling Haaland could not miss. And that, I think, much like Erling Haaland, shows a whole lot of maturity. When you look at the future for both Erling Haaland and Giovanni Reyna, it's all very bright for both of them, and they're all in a very similar trajectory. But right now, when you talk about Gio Reyna, you have to say, 17 years old, and he's showing that maturity. There's a lot to like about him.
Yeah?
Yeah, I agree with you. For me, that touch, what it did, I mean, there was all in his mind when he got the ball. You could see when Brandt had the ball, he kind of had a look, where are my players? And it's a very good point that a 17-year-old would have tried to shoot that himself, and he could have scored as well. But that touch, for me, that was the best touch of the whole Bundesliga, and I think that is something that you see at Dortmund at the moment. You can see that with Haaland as well. When anybody else scored, he's so happy with them scoring, and you can see that with Reyna as well. And I agree, this kid has an enormous future. I think when they sell Sancho in the summer, Reyna can take the next step. And as it was said, suddenly he looked like an old man, Erling Haaland, talking about a kid like Reyna. So it's just. The future is bright at Dortmund, but I also think that for next year, they have to go the next step, and the next step must to get closer to Bayern Munich, because you can have all the talents in the world, but they will be impatient to win titles, because after your football career, people count your titles.
Ali, we see that Haaland and Reyna have got something in common, of course. Both their fathers were professional footballers. Is it lazy of me to say that is an advantage, because they've been there, they've done it, they know how to maybe guide these players?
Well, no, it is an advantage. And because as a kid, you got access to certain things that other kids do not have. And you know what being a professional is like. You know what the mentality is all about. You know what the preparation is all about. You don't get ahead of yourself. And I can imagine that Claudio Reyna, the father of Giovanni Reyna, will sit Giovanni Reyna down every once in a while and say, hey, relax, bro. You're not a world beater just yet. You got to do this. You got to do that. You got to prepare to do this, because he has gone through those steps and he has achieved a level of success that his son can look to and say, yeah, I better listen to this guy. He knows what he's talking about. Not only is he telling me because he's my father and because he loves me, but because he knows and he has walked down that path. And I think, yes, that is an advantage. However, that only opens up a door. You as a player individually, as the son, now you have to walk through that door and make sure that your talent matches your work, your effort, your intensity, your ambition. All those things come from within. Your father can only point you a certain way. You have to be able to walk through that door.
Ali, I'm laughing because I know your son. I know the relationship you've got with him. He's a great soccer player. I just imagine one day maybe he wins the World Cup with someone. You'll still be going, oh, yeah, you think you're a big boy now. You get down, you go and do the dishes and you go and help your mother.
Till the day I die, Dan.
I know. Yeah, and your son a professional footballer as well. I know we got off tangent, but I think it's quite interesting in the fact that obviously you feel surely having lived through it, you can help him.
I think the advantage is, of course, that you don't have to relive your life or your dreams through your son. I think that is important. But I think that was well said there about that role. But I think that the main thing you can help someone is to think long term, because in football sports, it's all about short term. There is one game you do well, and then you think you're the world beater, and the next game you're bad, and you think you have to retire, so to say. So I think that the main thing with Erling Haaland is we've always been told, and I try to tell my son that you have to think in the long term, the consequences of you training hard, that is the consequence of then you playing someone. My son went another way. He went first to America, played at Duke. So he went a completely other way than a superstar like Erling Haaland. But it's still the same thing that you can tell them that everything, don't think of the consequences. You just have to work hard and have a great attitude. And the rest is like bonus, whatever you achieve in life. And I think that you shouldn't go too much into their game. When he signed his first professional contract in Scotland, I wasn't even close to the contract. I said, you do that through an agent. And I can read through it because you have to make your independent choice.
Let's get back, shall we, to the game. Leipzig looked terrible. Dortmund with the win. What I thought was interesting today, and I was thinking about it, when Timo Werner was substituted, Jan, it was probably good, wasn't it, that there wasn't a home crowd? Because surely they would have whistled and booed him as he came off his last home match. Because they can't be happy with the way this whole Chelsea thing has played out.
Well, both, because there are two teams who are not. Schalke will be very happy that there are no crowd at the moment, because that crowd is terrible when things are going bad. But Leipzig, I'm not sure about that, because in Germany they're more used to this process of clubs signing or losing players a bit earlier. What I would think they could boo is this decision that he may be not playing or apparently not going to play for them in the Champions League. That I think is a disgrace. Why should he do that? They are coming so far. They did ever so well against Tottenham Hotspurs. Surely they could have found a deal with Chelsea that he should have played in Lisboa for the Champions League. I think that is terrible. And I think, yeah, okay, COVID-19 has made a lot of problems. This shouldn't be a problem. Please let him stay for another couple of months. What is this all about? I mean, you can find a house in London. There are a lot of billionaires who have no bankruptcy, and there will be available houses in West London. Calm down, Timo Werner, and do your duty for RB Leipzig.
Before we all start Googling London property, Ali, what do you make of Timo Werner's decision, if indeed it is his?
It's embarrassing. And it is lacking professionalism at the very least. It is your responsibility as a player for Leipzig to see whatever is it that Leipzig is going to be involved in, to see that competition through. And when you leave a club, and in this case, Timo Werner leaving Leipzig for Chelsea, you don't just turn your back on whatever your history has been with that club. You have to understand that part of your success was the platform built by that club that showcased your talent. Yes, it's about your talent that takes you to Chelsea, but there was a platform in which you had to perform, and that platform comes from the structure of RB Leipzig. And so there has to be an understanding that, look, if I started the season with Leipzig, and now we're in Champions League, have we made it as far as we have? I should be able to play with my club and see it out. And if I'm Timo Werner, I am telling Chelsea, no, no, no. I'm going to play with Leipzig as far as we get in the Champions League. And then I turn my focus onto Chelsea. What really, really concerns me is the attitude that I saw today from Timo Werner. Not only in the performance out on the field that was without any sort of impact and sometimes without any sort of interest. When you saw him come off the field, he was just sitting there as if nothing had happened, as if this has nothing to do with him. And I'm going to be very careful in reading body language because, well, we just have to be mindful of how things come through the screen. But when you see him sitting there and they are losing the game and they end up losing 2-0 and the camera cuts to him and he's just kind of giggling and laughing and it's fine and it's okay, you have to say this guy has turned completely his back on the club. He has shut this door and he's moved on to Chelsea. And that is unacceptable because he still has responsibilities to RB Leipzig and he should be playing in Champions League. There's no doubt about that.
But to be a bit lawyer for Timo Werner, because he's not here. He's a good lad. And I think that if we could read into his body language, I agree with you. But if you saw Leipzig today, there was no one in that team who wanted to play today. There was a dismal appearance by them. I think that the Leipzig were terrible today. I'm not sure that this decision was made by Timo Werner, and that makes me even more sad, because if this is only a money thing or insurance kind of thing, that kind of put everything we believe in the Champions League to start the season and then to end the season there. And of course, that was manageable for him to play in the Champions League if there was a will from Chelsea Football Club.
Well, yeah, and I understand what you're saying, Jan, and I agree with you that Leipzig were terrible today. There's only one player that is going to Chelsea at the end of the season, and that's Timo Werner. And there's only one player who's not going to be available for Champions League, and that's Timo Werner. So while they were very poor today, it is fair to single out Timo Werner because he has brought on this on himself. And whether he's a good guy or not, the perception from the outside looking in, he doesn't come out of this looking all that great.
Meanwhile, Robert Lewandowski likes to score goals. Two more today, plus an assist as well. Jan, is he the favourite to win the Ballon d'Or?
He should be. I mean, it's time now that we should go after performances. I am afraid that he has to win the Champions League with Bayern Munich to get that. But if you see now the all-time greatest goalscorer season in Germany, it's only Müller's ahead of him. Three or four times Gerd Müller, and then there is even a Dieter Müller, who is the only one scoring six goals, by the way. What a great goalscorer he was as well. But what he's doing now, years after years, is just like unbelievable. I've said it before, and I said it again. My favorite player was Marco van Basten, and this is as close we get to a Marco van Basten. The way the balance, the way he put up an assist today as well, the way he worked for the team, the way he's kind of moves off the field. I mean, this is by far the best striker in the world, and it's time now to break this Ronaldo Messi thing. They have, of course, they've deserved every Ballon d'Or, but now we should go purely after who is the best player in the world at the moment. And the best striker and the goal-getter is no Robert Lewandowski. So not that I expecting that, because I know there is a lot of different forces and number of shirts and shoe deals and sport deals and all that kind of thing. But yes, Robert Lewandowski should this year win the Ballon d'Or.
And this isn't just making an argument for argument's sake, is it, Ali? You look at the way, certainly the return after the break, Messi didn't perform particularly well against Sevilla yesterday. Ronaldo obviously hasn't got going, only two matches in, I know. However, overall, Lewandowski, all these goals in the Bundesliga, and then if Bayern win the Champions League, it's very difficult to put an argument against why he shouldn't win it, isn't it?
I'm not going to put up an argument against it if all those things happen that you just mentioned.
Sure.
If Bayern Munich goes on to win Champions League, then I think he's a runaway winner. But that's the to-be-determined part of this conversation, because let's say Barcelona gets hot and somehow Messi and Barcelona end up winning this thing, then it's difficult to put up an argument against Lionel Messi. He kind of turns around, and it's all going to be decided over the next month or so, because I really do think that Lewandowski has put in himself in I would say, in the leading position. He's the front runner. But it won't be another month until he plays Champions League. And sure, so we may just forget all about Robert Lewandowski while the stage is right there for Lionel Messi in closing out La Liga. And maybe he leads Barcelona to another title. And if indeed they get hot and win Champions League, then it's a difficult conversation to have about Lewandowski if Bayern Munich do not pull through. So I think he's the front runner, but there's a lot to be played for both Lewandowski, Bayern Munich, and everybody else. Because the one thing that we know about this Champions League this year, it is wide open for somebody to get hot and win the whole competition.
And that's fair enough, because Lionel Messi, the best player of all time, we 100% agree on that. But we can sit and think that in 3 weeks' time, things can change around. But we also have to look at what we can't forget what Lewandowski have done. And the people who's deciding who's going to do Ballon d'Or, it can't be just be the attention of who will attend, because Robert Lewandowski is not that kind of Hollywood-style status anymore. But if Lionel Messi will win it, well, he should win it. And he is the fantastic player. I'm not saying that, but I think that we should rate very, very highly, because it's a long, long time since I've seen a striker number nine being so good as Robert Lewandowski is this season.
Last word on that Bayern game. We saw Chris Richards come on, the young US player. Ali, what a moment for him, for the centre back.
A big moment for Chris Richards, big moment for really the American soccer community, and having another player in the Bundesliga that has worked his way up. A product of FC Dallas. I saw him a couple of years ago when he first joined Bayern Munich in one of those North American trips where Bayern Munich was playing down in South Florida. That's when he first joined Bayern Munich. And it was at that point, a young 17, 18-year-old kid kind of dreaming and thinking of the possibility that perhaps he would get this chance at some point. Well, now this chance has become a reality, and it really is up to Chris Richards to, from here on out, trying to see whether he can maximize his opportunities, because I think he's going to get a chance to play. It's just a matter of how he goes about it and how he performs. I tell you, it's an exciting time to be a young American player in the Bundesliga. A whole lot of talent and a lot of players that are making their mark.
And a lot of chances there as well, Jan. You will be given the opportunity if you're good enough. We've seen that.
And you feel that with Hans Flick. I mean, there was a time that Bayern Munich put a lot of kids in their squads or on the bench. It was looking like makeup. But now they just put them in there and they know that they want them to succeed. And Hans Flick will give them the chance. And, I mean, you can only use the example of Davies, one of the most exciting players this season in the Bundesliga. It's like unbelievable the steps he's taken. I think the future for American soccer, and when you get these kind of players going, it must be so inspiring for a whole soccer community in the USA. And I see for a little country like Norway how inspiring our kids are. So this is great. And hopefully he understands tonight where he's somewhere in Munich having a good meal, how big a milestone this is, what a step that is for him to have his first 6 minutes in the Bundesliga. And hopefully he cherishes his shirt, because he will have a great career and this shirt is very special for him.
Thank you very much, guys. Remember, in the Bundesliga, it's the bottom two that automatically go down. 16th place then is a playoff from those coming up in the second tier of German football. And a disappointing result for Werder Bremen today. They lost 3-1 against Mainz, meaning they are looking all but doomed. The only hope they have, Fortuna Düsseldorf can only manage a 1-1 draw against Augsburg. So what that means is that if Fortuna Düsseldorf beat Union Berlin, it will be Werder Bremen who will be going down next week. Werder Bremen in action against Köln. They can only beat Köln and hope that the other result goes their way.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your baby to let you sleep in?
What? We could sleep in another half hour? Thanks, sweetheart. And you'll change yourself, too?
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.
The great thing about facts, they're proven. Like the fact that crude oil contains impurities. Or that base oil made from natural gas is 99.5% free of impurities. And the fact that Pennzoil is the first synthetic motor oil made from natural gas, not crude oil. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil. Based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30.
Been a good week for Atletico Madrid. A big victory against Osasuna midweek and a 1-0 win against Valladolid now puts them third in the table. They made a sweat today. The only goal coming in the 81st minute. Vitolo with the strike that puts them now level on points with Sevilla in third place. Meanwhile, on Sunday, it's all about Real Madrid against Real Sociedad. A huge game in San Sebastian for Zinedine Zidane's side, because a victory would put them top of the table after Barca dropped those points against Sevilla in that goalless draw. That'll be our main talking point tomorrow as we're reflecting on that big game for Real Madrid, looking to go top of La Liga table. Three games for you in the Premier League on Sunday. Newcastle taking on Sheffield United. Sheffield United, of course, hoping that goal line technology will be working for that tie. Aston Villa, meanwhile, taking on Chelsea. Then it's the Merseyside derby, Everton against Liverpool. Remember, if Liverpool win that game at Goodison and Manchester City lose against Burnley, then Liverpool will be champions of England. That brings the end of today's show. Thank you, as always, for watching. We'll be back tomorrow for more. Till then, goodbye. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Lots to talk about today, hence we've got three guests, Stevie, Frank and Julien Laurent. Jules, I've got to start with you. It's the first time I've had you on Extra Time since the iPad incident. Can you just give a brief synopsis as to what exactly happened?
Yeah, I mean, although you explained it quite well in the catastrophic last week. My middle son thought it was a good idea the other night last week to go on his iPad and play the game Brawl Stars for all our listeners who play Brawl Stars. And while I was taping a segment on PSG, thought it was a good idea. In 15 minutes, that is 15-1-5, made 11 transactions, 11, for £364. £364. His explanation was to make his characters better. Yeah, too right.
How old is he?
7.
Oh. That's a clever boy. Clever boy.
Come on.
Could be worse. Jules, he could support Arsenal, I suppose.
He's a hustler.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's our
right.
first question. Exactly. Will Arsenal ever return themselves with this current owner, Jules?
I don't think the owner has something to do in the current crisis. You know, he when they wanted the money for Pepe, he made the money available. When they wanted money before for big transfers like Aubameyang or like I said, the money was there. He, in this pandemic crisis, he guaranteed some of the club's asset as well. So I don't think the issue is there. I think the issue, as we've been saying on the show tonight, is that there's a lot of issues in that squad, and that's nothing to do with the Kroenke family.
They're the ones that employ the people that pick the players and go scouting and do everything else. That's, you know, part of their job is to have a staff. They're the head of the business, yeah. and they oversee who the staff are. And it's been going on for so long.
You're right.
It's been going on for so long, and nothing seems to be happening. That it has to be down to them, surely.
Yeah, I mean, no, I think they have some of responsibility, of course. But what I meant by that, Stevie, is that it's not them running the club on a daily basis. You know, Josh Kroenke is very involved, and you're right. He was part of the process of choosing Mikel Arteta. He was part of the process of, he was consulted for Unai Emery, but that was the old direction under Ivan Gazidis, for example. So they're part of it. But I think on a daily basis, they're also financing that club like they should do. The problem is, like you say, people under them who make decisions eventually, because the Kroenkes don't know much about football either. So it's other people like Raul Sagnelli and other like Ivan Gazidis before him who are making key decisions right now. And if those decisions are not right in terms of recruitment in players, recruitment of staff or managers, people around the manager, also people at the club bringing the money in, then you've got issues. But I still think that, you know, eventually once you start rebuilding that squad, you need to do it well, and now you can't afford any more mistakes.
Are you surprised none of the Arsenal players retaliated against Mupai with some harsh or studs-up challenges after he took out Bernd Leno?
Well, that's a normal answer when you see one of your teammates getting injured, and you see the jump, you see the action, but you don't really see what's going on. And you hear somebody screaming, and the first reaction is to go on the player who was next to him. But it didn't go that far. We've seen worse in football. I think that was just a normal reaction, and I'm not surprised it happened that way. But after we saw the player taking care more on Leno than what was going on with Mopé.
Stevie, when you were playing for Liverpool, and if someone took out one of your players, would it then be pretty much an unwritten rule that he was very much had a target on his back?
Absolutely. nothing to be said. Absolutely. Whoever gets the first chance, make it a good one. Players today don't have that sort of mentality in their brain somewhere, though. You know, we had to have it because of the way the game was played. You had to have that mentality of well, you know, you just have to, there has to be some sort of retribution. Whereas players today, the physical side of the game is not particularly in there. Well, you've got Arteta talking about they can't compete. So that tells you where it's all about fancy football and passing and all the lovely stuff. They're not interested in the other side of the game, which makes a difference.
Frank, same with you when you were at Chelsea or Marseille, places like that. Would it be a case that someone would have a target on their back if they injured one of your own?
Yes, of course, but it's difficult for the players to react now because you have so many cameras and everybody is judged on a microscope. So we were sometimes in the shade where we could do something to the opponents. Mm-hmm. That was easier for us. I think you can see Sergio Ramos, what he's able to do, but because maybe, I don't know, he has something special because of his name and his position as a captain of Real Madrid and Spain. But it's very, very hard for the players to get the revenge, let's say, that way.
He has a lovely beard now as well. Let's talk about defenders, shall we, Stevie? I'm not sure if you saw this, but Richarlison said that Marquinhos, Thiago Silva and Sergio Ramos are all better than Van Dijk.
Mm. Well, listen, I'm not even going to answer that question because you know the answer to that. But what I will say is, listen, we all have our opinions, right? Who we think's better, whether it's Van Dijk or Ramos or Thiago Silva or anybody else. And that's fine. But I think when you see a player being so moronic as Richarlison coming out and pretty much slamming the guy he's playing against the following day or in a couple of days, how stupid is that? Hmm. I mean, you talk about brainless. It's hard enough to play against Van Dijk without winding him up. So you can take it with a grain of salt, but when somebody comes out and says that right before they go to play against them, what a moron.
But Stevie, Richarlison plays for Everton. Of course, he's not going to say that Van Dijk is the best defender because he can't say that because of his fans.
Why not?
Because he's going to be hammered if he say that. We all know. I'm sure that Jules cannot say that Harry Kane is better than Aubameyang because he loves Arsenal, doesn't like Tottenham.
Well, Frankie, let me tell you a story. Years ago, a guy called Bob Paisley, who was a manager of Liverpool, Liverpool were playing Aberdeen in a Champions League game, or the old European Cup. And Bob Paisley went out in the papers and said that Gordon Strachan, who plays for Aberdeen, could possibly be the best player in the British Isles right now. Now, he was trying to put him off, he was winding him up. That's called being smart. That's telling the opposition that, oh yes, you are so fantastic and you're brilliant. You're putting them into a false sense of security. Mm. And that's what happened. Liverpool battered them 3-0 at home.
Yeah, but it's not really a derby. They don't belong to the same city. And I think it's a complete different situation. But now, talking about the three players that he names, there is a big competition with Van Dijk. The different styles, the fantastic player, but I don't know. I think Van Dijk is one of the top, and the others has been named are also, except maybe Sergio Ramos for Stevie, the best defenders in the world.
How can you say Marquinhos is better than Van Dijk? Are you having a laugh?
No.
How many centre-forwards would...
I don't agree. Marquinhos is a fantastic player. You cannot say that. It's different style.
How many centre-forwards? I'll tell you what. You go and ask any centre-forward playing football today. I'll tell you what. Here's your choice. Play against Marquinhos or play against Van Dijk. Not one of them's going to say Marquinhos.
I think Richarlison might.
Sorry, Van Dijk.
I think Richarlison will, Stevie.
I don't agree with you. I don't agree with you, Stevie. I think it's going to be a nightmare.
Well, I mean, one with brains.
It's going to be a nightmare for the striker who's going to be facing Marquinhos or Van Dijk. They're different styles, but Marquinhos can be a dog.
Ask Jules.
He follows PSG.
I'm sorry, Marquinhos is a really good player, yes, but He's not Van Dijk.
Mm, I don't agree with you, but
Jules,
you can agree to disagree.
Jules, you get to get involved.
What?
In this. Lucky you.
I was hoping you would not ask me my opinion on that one.
So just answer the question, Jules.
Yeah, come on.
If who would you have?
I mean,
would you rather have Van Dijk or Marquinhos in your team? Have you got a choice? An easy question.
I would go for Van Dijk. Yeah, I mean, I think Van Dijk is right now he's the best defender in the world.
There you go.
No one is better than him as a defender, as a centre back for me. But People can disagree with me and you, Stevie, but I just think that there's no one better than Van Dijk right now. No Thiago Silva, no Sergio Ramos, no Marquinhos, who are all great defenders, but not at the level that Van Dijk has been playing for the last
few years. Okay, I give up.
To your house.
Okay, Stevie, I give up. I prefer Van Dijk as well, but I want you to contest your affirmation, so that's it.
Jules, has Leicester now replaced Arsenal in the big six?
They're there now. They will finish top four, but it's about consistency as well with a team like Leicester. It's not just, you know, breaking once or even twice in the last 5 years in the top four. I mean, albeit winning the league once and then finishing third or fourth like they will do this season. Is if they can do it again next year while also playing in the Champions League, because this year they had no European competition as well, so you just play once a week, and we know how beneficial that is for a squad. Next season they will play every 3 days, especially when the Champions League will resume in October. The games will be even closer and even more to them, so it'll be even harder for them. But of course, if they can gain that consistency, if they keep getting their recruitment right, and continue finding the Soyuncus and the Tielemans and the Madisons and people like that, of course they have a chance. They are a very good, well-run club. They have great fans. They've got good facilities. They've got a very good manager in Brendan Rodgers. So of course they can be there regularly in that top four. But it's easier to say it than to do it. And I think we will look carefully at what
Stevie,
they do next season.
It always surprises me the amount of times you see a pro footballer take a corner and then not get over the front defender. What, if any, of things that you see happen that are basic skills that players get wrong more than they should? Good question.
Ooh. Well, my pet hate is defending, but I've said that a million times, not closing the ball down properly. That would be my biggest one, to be honest with you. That is up there as far as not getting it past the first defender, because you're basically making your defenders run 50 or 60 yards back to get back into position, so. Yeah, I would say defending first, but I'm going to agree with the question and say that's probably the second
what
one.
What was that like?
I can't think of other ones.
Centre back coming up, ready for a corner. The man can't get it past the first man. You got to run all the way back.
I wanted to kill the guy who just did it, you know, because you're normally trained for that, and especially when you play. I think it was a Wolves free kick today in second half where João Moutinho was about to shoot the free kick, and I saw Willy Bolly coming in the 16-yard box of West Ham, and he played the ball backwards, and they went to the left, and they lost the ball. If I'm Bolly, on my way back, I think I'm ready to slap in the face of Moutinho for not respecting me. Now, that's no respect. I understand the question now. It's why I'm getting crazy.
Frank, would you say something? Would you have a word with the player?
Oh, yes. I say, yeah. Are you kidding me? Next time you tell me like that, I don't waste my strength for that. I don't waste anything for that. Just stay backwards. What are you doing? Just be tuned in, you know, and think that we just have to run and I sprint back just because you're crap. So yeah, you have to do something. Yeah, you have to say something.
Did you say that to Zidane?
No, because Zidane did always, well, he wasn't shooting corners first. It was Emmanuel Petit or Youri Djorkaeff. But no, they were always perfect.
Right.
You saw that in the final of 98. Yeah. So nothing to say about it.
Stevie, how can Maguire make up for his lack of pace? Or what can Solskjaer do in terms of who he partners him with?
I think Maguire's been great since he's gone to Man United, and it's all about your decision making and your starting position as a centre back. If you don't have pace, then you can't overcommit, and you certainly can't be too far deep. So your starting position is absolutely the key to everything. And then of course your decision whether you actually start backing off or whether you make a challenge. On this occasion with Bergwijn, he got absolutely caught between two stools. He wasn't deep. He wasn't too close, and he ended up no man's land and a bit of pace he doesn't have, and that's why he ends up there. But listen, that what we saw in that Spurs game from Maguire is the first time I've seen that since he pretty much went there. And so he's been doing a fantastic job, to be honest. Everybody makes mistakes, but it was a big mistake against Spurs and Bergwijn.
Final question. Stevie and Frank, what were the worst weather conditions that you ever had to play a match in? Stevie, let's start with you.
Hello.
I'm going to say the aftermath of the, because I guess they're looking for like snow and rain and everything else. But I'll tell you the worst. We were playing an FA Cup third round tie against York one year, and it was back in the days when the ground was rock hard, because overnight the ground had frozen. And what they did was, they knew the frost was coming, and they put straw on the field. So what they would do is they'd cover the whole field with straw, and then a couple of hours before kick-off, take it off. For whatever reason, I don't know, the straw was meant to keep the ground soft, but I can assure you it didn't. And so it ended up, it was like playing on concrete. It was just madness. And we were European champions at the time, and we were glad to get away with a 0-0 draw at York, who were in the third division at the time. So that was the worst. It was impossible to play. You could hardly stand up.
Frank?
For me, it's definitely a game that we play in Tromsø, north of Norway, like 500 miles from the North Pole. Oh, sorry, again.
That's all right, Frank. Don't worry.
It's nice.
The illusion from yesterday. Yes.
And I can, and it's funny because I can disappear, you know, like that very quickly.
We can still hear you though, unfortunately.
We played close to the North Pole in the European Cup. I think it was Champions League, but I'm not sure. And it was five hours daylight. And we played there, and we started to snow second half, that we had to stop the game, three times to find the lines. So they had to get rid of the snow. Wow. And I remember falling down with a striker, and the striker got up and got some ice, and because he hit my head, and he said, do you need some ice? And we were all freezing. That was very funny. We lost, I think, 3-2 and won 7-1 in the second leg. But that was a crazy, crazy day where we couldn't stop the game because it couldn't be rescheduled. But that was a hell of an experience, and that was quite a fun souvenir.
What was worse, Frank, playing in the really, really cold, or you played in Qatar as well in the very hot?
I prefer to play on the cold. My ancestors are Vikings, so I'm not used to the heat. And the first time that I played in Qatar, that was horrible. I was running with a bag of ice that I was putting on my head, and it was 9 p.m. and it was like 50 degrees Celsius. That was really a nightmare. It was in August in Qatar, and that was really horrible. I prefer the cold than the heat.
What about you, Stevie? There's pictures of you in Mexico 86 and they're putting sun cream on.
Oh, I tell you what, not just me. There was 11 ginger pasty-faced Scotsmen trying to run around at 4 o'clock in the afternoon in Mexico. Absolute nightmare. It was shocking. Actually, the best bit was at half time. We played Germany. We came at half time, and they had oxygen masks on the wall. The problem was there was only 6 oxygen masks, so there was a big fight. Everybody was climbing over each other, trying to get the oxygen mask, pushing everybody out the road.
Oh
my god!
We've had fireworks and everything. Mad. Thank you very much, boys. Jules, keep your kid away from the iPad tonight, mate.
Yeah, he's grounded and no iPad.
Well done.